This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Mike Ditka joins us on Sports Byline, the former coach of the Chicago Bears and the Hall of Fame tight end, and he has a book out which is very appropriately named In Life, First You Kick Ass, Reflections on the 1985 Bears and Wisdom from the Coach. And Mike, as I was looking through the book, I saw at the very beginning you say to those men on the field who made all this happen and to the memory of the old man, and I am assuming that the old man is George Halas.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was the old man, but when I said the term, I said it very affectionately because that's what everybody called him in the old days.
Mike, when you take a look back at 1985 and that Chicago Bears team, take me through how that team came together and what made it so good that year.
Well, I think, first of all, you got to have a vision. You have to have goals. And I think we had those goals. We had them in 84. We fell short against San Francisco in a championship game out there. But I think we refocused and we pulled it together. And, you know, our defense was just outstanding. Our offense, people don't realize how good it was because I think we ended up second in points scored and first in time of possession, first and first down. So we had a good football team. We had a lot of good pieces in it. We had a lot of good backups who could step in and play when they got a chance too.
At what point in that season did you recognize that this could be a team that was very special?
Well, early in the year we got down to Tampa Bay early in the game, and it was when we were going to have to win with our offense, and we came back and scored 38 points to win with our offense. Up in Minnesota when McMahon came in and threw the three touchdowns, I knew that was pretty special. That was really a big turnaround for us.
In 1985, the Bears defense held other teams to 10 points or less 14 times. And then, of course, you go on to win the New England Patriots. In this book, you talk about a lot of stories that people were not familiar with. What are some of your favorite stories about that team in that season?
Well, I mean, it's just not one story. I mean, it was a cast of characters that had character. I mean, they played with passion. They had fun playing the game. I mean, they didn't take anything for granted, so they were just a good group of guys.
Were they a team that you had to really have a tight rein on? Because there
no,
were a lot
and
of...
That's what, and I didn't. You know, I used to play the game. And, you know, I was a hellraiser when I played. And I didn't, you know, put people, you understand what's important. You know, you understand you got to be on time at your meetings. You got to practice. You got to play like hell. Other than that, I really didn't get too much involved. I hated to find guys because I thought they worked too hard for it, but I did find some people over time. But I let them be themselves, really. I wasn't a tight rein, no, but we had rules. Now, everybody had the same rules. Walter Payton's rules applied to everybody, and everybody's rules applied to Walter Payton, so we didn't have a special set of rules for certain guys.
I know a lot of time there is a game at the end of the previous season that kind of sets the tone for the next season, and I'm just wondering whether that lost
it was the 49. It was the 49er game.
That's the
I mean,
point.
They whipped us soundly. They beat the hell out of us. And you know, I made a mistake going in. I thought we could, you know, play with our defense and be tough and you know, just be limited on offense. But we found out we had to go in and score points against their football team if we were going to have any chance of beating them. And the next year, I think we put up 28 and we beat them.
And of course, that is where the idea for using William the Refrigerator Perry came from, did it not? Because of what Bill Walsh did in that 84 game.
Well, he put Guy McIntyre in the backfield, so I remember that very well. So I just put William back. Actually, we worked with William on some other things, and, you know, it just seemed like an appropriate time to do it. You know, I forgive very easily. I just don't forget very easily.
Tell me the story about Walter Payton, the time he phoned your office pretending to be a woman.
Well, when I first took the job, you know, I was up there. I would be there late at night, and I get these phone calls from an Hispanic-speaking woman, and, you know, she was, you know, kind of flirting and saying that she'd like to meet me at the motel and all this. And I never paid any attention to it. And so one day I'm on the practice field and Walter comes up behind me with the same accent, you know. He said, well, her name was Yolanda or something. He said, I'm Yolanda, you know, and I tell you what, I died laughing, but I wanted to kill him.
The other thing, too, is a lot of people don't realize how you ended up becoming the coach of the Chicago Bears, and it started all with a letter that you wrote in 1978 when you were the special teams coach with Tom Landry in Dallas. What did you put into that letter to George Halas?
Well, it was very simple. I just said, you know, I didn't leave the Bears on the best of terms. I said I'd like to return and have a shot at being the head coach, and I would return them to the type of football team that George Halas would be proud of. That's what I told him. Basically, that was the gist of the whole letter. I told him I wasn't ready then, but I would be ready in a period of time, and I would love that opportunity. 1982, the opportunity came, and he hired me. He was the only one who would have hired me. No one else in the organization would have. Finks, McCaskey's, none of them. So, you know, what I owe to the Bears, I owe to Mr. Hallis, period, you know. I played for the 63 championship team, and I coached the 85 Super Bowl team. So, you know, we've come full circle. And I believe I'm the last of the Hallis Bears, believe me.
Mike, are you the type of person that will look beyond maybe the reputation of a coach or a particular person and hire them on their ability? I say that because of the fact that it was kind of a love-hate relationship with you and Buddy Ryan, and I'm just wondering what it was about him that attracted him to you and vice versa.
Well, I think he was, first of all, I inherited Buddy Ryan when I got there, and which was no bad deal to me. Buddy Ryan's a good coach. I mean, he had a great scheme at that time, and he had the personnel to play that scheme. And we kept adding the personnel. We got him the right people. We got the Wilbur Marshall, Richard Dent, you know, Perry. You know, we got some good guys. You know, we put Duerson in a secondary. Mike Richardson, we needed a corner. He came in and played corner for us, even though he was a safety. Les Frazier was a heck of a football. Gary Fensick. Then we had Hampton and McMichael and all those guys. So we had Singletary. We had a heck of a defensive football team, and on offense we did the same thing. You know, we had Peyton, Suey. We had a pretty solid offensive line. I needed a left tackle. I drafted Jim Covert. I needed speed. I drafted Willie Gault. You know, and that basically needed a quarterback. We drafted Jim McMahon. So, you know, the people we drafted for a purpose, and we put them into the puzzle, and it worked.
I always felt the Chicago Bears were a lot like maybe the Chicago Bulls in that you had Michael Jordan and you had Walter Payton and then you had Jim McMahon and the Bulls at that time had Dennis Rodman. I mean, it was a cast of characters that all worked. Why did it work, Mike?
Well, I think it works because they all respected each other. I think that's the main thing. It's not important that every player love one another. That's not going to happen. But I think you have to respect each other for the way you play the game. The way you practice, the way you, you know, the importance you put on your job. And I think that's one thing our guys did. I think they respected each other to a man about the way we went about playing football. And there was no nonsense. I mean, we practiced hard, we played hard.
I also got the sense that the discipline for that team really came from the locker room itself, not so much from you or maybe others, but those players all together, the ones that you mentioned, all kind of disciplined themselves.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. I've said 100 times, a million times that I had more leaders on that football team than any team, should. I mean, I had a lot of guys. They took care of the locker room pretty good. I mean, they kept guys in line, and that made my job a lot easier.
I know that you lament the fact that Walter Payton never got the chance to score that touchdown in the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots. What happened in that game that he did not get the chance?
Well, it really nothing happened. I mean, we scored 46 points. I really didn't think about it, you know, which was my fault. But, it's something it didn't seem like it was important to me. I didn't really understand it, you know, why that was so important. Then I thought about it after the fact, and I knew why it was so important. So if I had it to do over again, I would have made sure he got the ball. You know, Barry said, well, how can you let Perry score? Well, Perry, that play we run a lot, you know. Actually, in the game, if anybody looks at the game films, Walter was a decoy in the game. Our leading rusher was Matt Suey. And the reason he was a decoy, because I saw the way that New England defense the last time we played him in during the season, I said, this is ridiculous, you know. I said, we can take advantage of everything they're doing by getting the ball to other people, and that's what we did.
Also, you regret the play that had Les Frazier blowing out his knee on that reverse on a punt play. Why does that bother you a little bit, Mike?
Well, that was just Steve was trying to, you know, and Steve was a young coach at that time, and he was trying to, you know, earn his spurs, and, you know, show that he could come up with a play that was, you know, creative and this and that. And it was the wrong time and the wrong place for it, and, of course, the wrong thing happened. So it was a accumulation of a lot of dumb things happened because of it. But, you don't need to do that. The game was in hand. There was no reason to run a reverse, and that reverse really helped shorten Les's career.
What do you want people to come away with from that 85 season about the Bears team? What will they find in this book?
Well, the defense, I mean, you take any team that shuts out the New York Giants and the Los Angeles Rams in the playoffs and then gives up 10 to the New England Patriots. I mean, I never heard of that. I mean, that's pretty good football. I mean, that's a team that was on a mission. And I think the loss to, Miami probably helped us refocus because we came out with a little more of intensity after that.
Are you happy with the way the book came out, Mike?
Yeah, you know, it's not a bad book. It's an easy book to read. Rick's a good friend of mine, and, you know, we wrote that. We're going to write another one on be running for God one day. But you know, until I get to run for it, I don't know if I'll make it.
Mike, take care.
God bless you guys. Take care.
Nice to talk to you again. Again, Mike Ditka, he wrote this book with Rick Thielander, who is the fine sports writer, and a very interesting title. It's called In Life, First You Kick Ass, Reflections on the 1985 Bears and Wisdom from the Coach. And there's no doubt about it, that 85 Bears team was just incredible. They shut down everybody. And a lot of people will tell you that they think that 1985 Bears team may be the greatest defensive team in the NFL. When we come back, we're going to continue talking a little football. We do that as we continue with more of you and Sports Byline.